My name is Tricia Overmeyer. I'm with the EPA Brownfields office, and I coordinate the land revitalization activities for the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. With me today and making the presentation will be Carlos Pochon. Carlos manages the Brownfields and Land Revitalization Technology Support Center. He's with EPA's Office of Superfunds and Technology Innovation. Carlos tracks and reports on the use of remedial technologies in the Superfund program. He's also recently worked as a special assistant to the EPA administrator and has worked with the United States Trade Representative doing environmental reviews of free trade agreements. Also presenting with us today is Christine Gaffney. Christine works out of EPA's Region 3 office in Philadelphia. She's responsible for awarding and managing grant funds under the EPA Brownfields programs to states and communities for the assessment and cleanup of brownfield properties. Christine serves as the Brownfields coordinator for Region 3. Region 3 serves the states of Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, and the District of Columbia. Christine is also the state coordinator in the Brownfields program for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Previously, Christine has also served as EPA's Region 3 Land Revitalization Coordinator. With that, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Carlos Pochon. You can follow through on the Internet. We'll tell you which slide we're on, so you can advance your slides as we go along. Carlos will start. I'm going to ask that we hold questions to the end of the presentation, but if you want to submit your questions via email, you can feel free to type in your questions and send them as we go along, and we'll keep our answers to the end. But if you're going to use your phone to ask a question, we're going to hold those to the end. Again, we're asking that everyone please mute your phone so that we don't have a lot of background noise during the presentation. If you don't have a mute button on your phone, please hit *6 to mute your phone. Later on, if you want to unmute your phone during the question and answer session, you can hit *6. Also, please do not put your phone on hold. That'll minimize the effect of a lot of background music when you hit the hold button. So please, no holds, and use *6 or your mute button on your phone to mute the telephone. We'll get started. We're going to hold questions to the end. However, you can feel free to type in your questions at any time during the presentation, but phone questions we're going to hold to the end. Okay, with that, I'm going to turn it over to Carlos.
Thanks, Patricia. So let's all go to slide number 2. One thing you'll notice that for today's discussion, we've kept the slides as short as possible, the presentation down to only 24 slides. We really are looking forward to having a discussion with you. For those of you logging on now, we hope you'll excuse the error there was in sending out the dial-in number. It looks like that's been corrected because we're getting a lot of calls. For those of you on the Internet, sorry for keeping you waiting. On slide number 2, what we have are the topics that we're going to cover today. So the first is sustainability and green cleanups. We're going to be very brief on this. It has been discussed on Internet seminars and different conferences and presentations. So I think the knowledge on what is considered a green cleanup is out there, but we do want to emphasize it, set up the stage a little bit for the discussion on why it is that we're looking at voluntary green cleanup standards. So the second part, which Christine Gaffney will be covering, is the area, the topic on EPA's vision of a green cleanup standard. A couple of areas that we'll focus on there is what EPA expects that the standards will achieve, why it is that we have an interest in seeing green cleanup standards. And the second part is, the approach that we're looking at those standards to be developed. One of the things that we tried to be clear about is that EPA itself does not expect to be developing standards, but we hope to work with other organizations to do that. And again, Christine will walk us through that part there. And then the third bullet on slide 2, the discussion and feedback on key questions. Patricia will be walking us through those. So as we go through the presentation, if you have any ideas, any thoughts, any suggestions, or any questions, please jot them down because we have budgeted a time to be able to discuss these with you. And we definitely look forward to hearing your feedback on concepts such as what the green cleanup framework would look like, how we structure standards and the certification of those standards, and then implementation considerations such as cost, recognition of a green cleanup, et cetera. So again, hopefully the presentation will build toward a fruitful discussion on those topics. So we could go to slide number 3.
I'm going to ask once again that everyone please put your phones on mute. If you don't have a mute button, please use *6. Thank you.
The slide number 3, the heading is what's driving the move towards green. This is a little bit of a background on, okay, where are we coming from regarding green cleanups, green remediation. The term is used interchangeably. A question we often hear is, isn't cleanup sites green by definition? And yes, it is, but let's consider a little bit how the environmental stewardship is evolving in the U.S. and elsewhere. We've made, since the 1970s, we've made great progress in cleaning surface waters, improving air quality, preventing further contamination of soils and groundwater, and, you know, beyond EPA's mission, protecting wildlife and ecosystems. So we're definitely better stewards of our natural resources. We have less waste going to landfills. We use fewer raw materials in the products and services we use every day. And then regarding contaminated sites, well, advances in engineering and field practices have allowed us to tackle complex contamination problems in soil and groundwater, problems that early on in programs such as Superfund and River Corrective Action seemed insurmountable. And once innovative technology has on itself, we have a mature, though definitely not simple, regulatory framework to address existing contamination problems and future ones. But however, as with many other sectors, sustainability principles drive us to seek continuing improvements in the work we do. Witness concepts such as sustainable agriculture, green buildings, brownfield versus greenfield development, natural drainage systems, green chemistry, et cetera. So in all sectors, we see that through the application of sustainability principles, we are both improving the quality of products and services while reducing their environmental footprint. So the question is, the question we're asking ourselves is, can we do more in cleaning up contaminated sites to improve the outcome of that good work? And that's basically where we are headed. So let's go to slide number 4. Slide number 4, for those of you who have been following the discussion of green cleanups and over the past year or so, you probably have seen this slide before, but we think it's important to put it up here. Main purpose is to set a little bit of a boundary or scope around what it is that we're considering green cleanups. In the area of sustainable use and long-term stewardship, as I suggested earlier, there's a lot of work being done there. What we're looking at is in cleaning up contaminated sites, moving those concepts of sustainability a little bit back and focusing in on the cleanup phase of moving a site, contaminated site, towards productive reuse. What is it that we can do in the process of cleaning up a site to increase the benefits of that work? If we go to slide number 5, that was a little bit, you know, the thinking behind it. Is it relevant? Is there still work to be done? Definitely. This slide, and excuse the small font, so I hope you have been able to print it out. It's easier to read. This is some information on a subset of treatment technologies only in the Superfund program. But basically, as you can see, there's a very large mix of approaches to clean up contaminated sites. Often we think, oh, it's just a matter of dig and haul, but that's not the case, and even if it were, there are both technologies that treat waste in situ. There are technologies that we excavate and then treat. And all these different approaches, many of them have some common activities associated with them, and quite often those are common to any construction site. Some of them are very specific to each technology. Well, one of the points to make here is that it'll be difficult. There's a challenge in defining what is green in cleaning up contaminated sites, given the huge suite and variety of approaches to clean up those sites. So we'll recognize that is a challenge that's out there. And if we go to slide number 6, That was the complexity of the types of approaches to cleaning up contaminated sites. But still, one thing is true, there's still a lot of contaminated sites to be cleaned up across the program. Again, if you can't see this figure clearly, please excuse the quality. You can get a very clear copy of it from the reference, the market study, from when it was drawn, where it was drawn. The point to make here is that there's still, based on 2005 estimates, at least $209 billion of work to be done cleaning up contaminated sites. You see the breakout there. It's relatively evenly distributed as far as money is concerned across RCRA aggressive action, which is a red slot on the top, underground storage tanks, Department of Defense, Department of Energy, civilian agencies, and that blue on the left is national priority list sites, in other words, Superfund. So a lot of work remaining to be done and across a lot of sites. Another thing to emphasize here is that there are many small sites that cost relatively little each, and a few very large sites that cost a lot of money, but at which lots of work, different kinds of work takes place. So I talked about the complexities of the technologies and what is considered green at each site. That's one thing to tackle. Another point is that there is a lot of work to be done. The work we do in identifying opportunities to reduce the environmental footprint of contaminated sites, there's still an opportunity for it to have repercussions down the road because there's still a lot of work to be done. And then finally, another point to make here is that we are looking at a standard that applies, of achieving a standard, of working with parties to achieve a standard that applies to all regulatory frameworks. That's very important. It would be very difficult to develop one for each individual program. So with that, let's go to slide number 7. So what is a green cleanup? I've said this a couple of times so far, but let me reiterate it. The way we're defining it, and this is based on the definition that was included in the green cleanup primer, green remediation primer that was released in April of 2008. But basically, the concept is considering all the environmental effects of a cleanup during each phase and incorporating strategies to maximize the net environmental benefit of the cleanup. Let's look at some examples of what it is that we're talking and referring to in green cleanups. In slide number 8, that donut-shaped figure is one that we're using to try to convey the suite of best practices that lead to increased sustainability in the way we clean up contaminated sites. So often when we hear green cleanups, the feedback I've been receiving at least is that, so green energy. Well, yes, that's definitely one of the aspects, but it's more than that. It's what can we do regarding air quality in the vicinity of cleanup projects. So all the equipment we use, are we using low sulfur diesel? Are we reducing particulate matter emissions? Is there something we can do to improve dust mitigation and et cetera that will reduce the impact on air quality, which is particularly relevant to the area immediately around the project. Water resources as well. What is it about reducing the amount of water that's required to do the cleanup or reducing the impacts on water quality, be it surface water bodies, et cetera, from the work that is being done. Also land and ecosystems. There are many basic concepts there, such as avoiding soil compaction, considering wildlife habitat, considerations during the work and in the restoration of the site. Materials and waste, adopting quite often is the concept here is to adopt best practices that exist in other sectors. In the construction sector in general, in most cities nowadays when we see a building come down, one of the first things that we see is a rock crusher that's segregating concrete from steel, from other recyclables. So it's to what extent can we apply these concepts two projects where we are cleaning up contaminated sites and just some demolition work to be done. And then long-term stewardship, and we'll get into that in a little bit more detail now. So a couple of examples. We only have two because this is not the focus. We've already had several seminars on these on the topic of green remediation. I invite you to go to the CLUIN Internet Seminars page and look back over the last year if you want to get up to speed on what is being discussed. So let me just focus on a couple. One is air elements, concepts such as the use of cleaner fuel and retrofitted diesel engines. quite often the famous black puff of smoke. What can we do at construction sites to minimize the particulate matter, SOx, NOx, et cetera, that are being emitted by the equipment, both auxiliary equipment and major yellow iron and other internal combustion engine powered equipment. So how can operations be modified to reduce operating and idling time in addition to retrofitting the diesel engines? As I mentioned before, where are we maximizing the options to minimize the dust export of contaminants? Concepts like minimizing long-distance transport or maximizing the efficiency of the transportation that needs to take place to both to put a remedy of cleanup in place. If we go to slide number 10, to some examples of water use and core elements. And again, these are expanded significantly in the green remediation primer, which you can get from the URL we'll provide at the end of the presentation. But basically, it's kluin.org/green remediation. And by the way, on that site, we also have a series of site profiles, and you can easily pick which ones have any of the best practices in stewardship, air quality, energy, etc. But regarding water use, I mentioned minimizing water use and maximizing reuse, reclaiming treated or storm water for beneficial reuse, using native vegetation that requires minimal irrigation, particularly when we're moving on to the reconstruction phase, and use stormwater best management practices, which are common, as I mentioned earlier, concepts such as it's escaping right now, but basically concepts that where we are reducing the amount of stormwater that's running off off-site. So those are just some examples. Now, what can we do to get these best practices out in the field? Well, first is to identify what they are, benchmark and document green cleanup best management practices. So we started about a year ago with the release of the primer. We've been doing a lot of work in documenting and writing these up in the profiles that I mentioned earlier. So that helps get that knowledge out there, share that information. And again, lots of this is not the work that we're doing, but work that others are doing. What we're trying to do is capture it and share it so that those best management practices are widely disseminated. Another area is to assemble a toolkit of enablers. Enablers is for all those involved when it comes to EPA decision makers, be it any of the cleanup programs. What do they need to be able to foster these best practices at their sites, whether it's, for example, when it comes to Superfund, whether it's a fund lead site, PRP lead site, federal facility, et cetera. An example are the contracts toolkit. What can we use and what can anybody use? And we've already put that out there. Remedial action contracts. What kind of language do we use that fosters consulting engineering firms where a lot of the good thinking takes place to suggest these best practices to their clients? And how will those clients recognize and incentivize that type of those types of recommendations? So that's an example of a toolkit. Another is building networks of practitioners, as we are doing now in part, but also both internally and externally. We support EPA's renewable project managers, on-scene coordinators, and across the regions, different regions are hosting internal seminars, workshops, et cetera. But we're also working with external parties, and such as the National Brownfields Conference and other events where we are doing this outreach. Performance metrics and tracking mechanisms, that's a challenging area we continue to work on to be able to both at a site level and at a program level determine how well we are doing. And finally, the purpose of this briefing is collaborate with the private sector to develop a standard, which in a way can be considered an enabler. It's something that it fosters and allows us to recognize green cleanups when they take place. So with that, let's go to slide 12. This is to recognize a lot of work that's taking place out there. A couple of points is Duomo Green Task Force. They were started up also about a year ago. They're doing a lot of work across the Association of State and Territorial Solid Waste Management Officials, which is what Duomo represents, looking, for example, at developing a list of incentives that state regulatory programs can use and to recognize green cleanups, to create an incentive for both site owners and those doing the cleanup to adopt these best practices. a couple of other ones is ITRC. I think they have the first conference call for green and sustainable remediation project yesterday. You're welcome to take a look at them at the www.itrcweb.org. They're just getting started. As you know, ITRC produces tech regs, which is a type of interpretation of guidance on specific topics. They've done it in the past with fiber remediation. They've done it with a series of other technologies, and they're looking at doing something similar for green cleanup. So we'll look at them as they move forward as well. And then the private sector is doing is organized as well, and they're mostly, not only, but mostly around the sustainable remediation forum. And they have a periodic, I think it's biannual meetings, and that's a forum for discussion as well and exchanging knowledge and information. At the bottom, I put the URL we put up about a year ago as well, kluman.org/green remediation, and that is where at least EPA is locating a lot of the information that generates these seminars, for example. We'll be able to access them through there, documents, et cetera, profiles, et cetera. So with that, let's go to slide number 13. This one is a little bit redundant, so I'm going to be very brief because I've talked about some of these things already. But a couple of things I point out that are in the pipeline, which folks have often talked about, primer and those examples I used earlier of best practices and clean up contaminated sites to increase their sustainability, they're rather generic. So one of the areas we're moving towards is bundling them around the most common cleanup approaches. So we recently released what a quote-unquote dig and haul cheat sheet, which is available on that green remediation URL. We're working on a pump and treat one. SVE is next in the pipeline, bioremediation. So what we're doing is taking the most common approaches to clean the contaminated sites and building a cheat sheet around, okay, what are the best practices that I could adopt for cleaning up the site using this technology or this approach. So the point, though, of course, is one of the activities that is very active right now, is, as we mentioned earlier, is the concept of developing a green cleanup standard that would recognize when and where green remediation or green cleanups are applied at a site. And with that,
okay, thank you, Carlos. We're going to now turn to Christine Gaffney in the EPA's Region 3 office. Again, Christine Gaffney is our Region 3 Brownfields Coordinator. We still have just a little bit of background noise on the phone. Anyone who does not have their phone on mute, please put it on mute. If you don't have a mute button, press *6. Later on, to take your phone off mute, you can use #6. But for now, please either hit the mute button or hit *6. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Christine.
Hi, everybody. I hope I'm coming in loud and clear. So Carlos, you know, gave us a good background on what EPA has been doing in the realm of green cleanups lately and, you know, some of the things that are happening out there in the field. And what we're seeing, obviously, is there's a lot going on. A lot of different organizations, a lot of different agencies are running around trying to figure out what green remediation is and how they can incorporate it better into their practices and get credit for it and talk about best practices, et cetera. So what we wanted to demonstrate was sort of a new way of thinking here by looking at our regulatory frameworks and trying to overlay it with goals for green cleanup. So we wanted to think more holistically that would consider sort of going beyond what's currently required in the cleanup programs, whether it's Superfund or RCRA or a VCP program, and looking at what we could do better. And then finding a suitable sort of universal process that could be used by all the cleanup programs without requiring us to go into all our different regulations and statutory frameworks to go through the policy or regulation type approach to achieve our goals. So if you turn on to slide 15, what we came up with is the thought of, hey, could we develop a national voluntary standard that would be a tool to help provide a framework and provide direction and a consistent approach that would encourage and reward practitioners for going above and beyond their cleanup criteria and incorporating greener practices. So there's a lot of reasons why we think the timing is right for this. Starting with the bullets here on the page, you know, growing interest. Everybody wants to be green. You know, I think we all have seen that in the news and the press and in all our different programs. Green is the hot buzzword of the of this year, and so there's an impetus for us to be considering this. Using a standard approach would also help us to sort of incorporate a lot of the new tools that are being developed out there. As Carlos mentioned, different organizations like the IRTC are putting together training programs, et cetera, on this. Energy calculators are being developed. Life cycle analysis approaches and tools are being developed. All these tools would hopefully be able to be something that would be utilized under a standards approach. We want to build upon the both existing and what we assume are going to be forthcoming state and local government incentives for green cleanups, and we're working with the SWAMO on what those incentives will be. U.S. Green Building Council, we've talked to them about this concept. They're interested in it. They've told us that if we can develop a standard, it's something they can incorporate into and eventually give us additional points for under their LEED certification program. A standards approach will help us leverage resources in the private sector. In other words, EPA won't have to go into and revise its policy and rules and regulations because the standard will basically, the approach will be developed and implemented essentially in the private sector. And, Hello?
Hello, this is Patricia Overmeyer of the EPA Brownfields Program. You're on the Cluin session on green cleanup standards. We're asking that everyone please put their phones on mute. If you don't have a mute button, please hit *6. We're in the middle of the presentation. Christine, please go ahead.
Okay, and we'll also be able to track individual projects using a standard. It will help us sort of analyze what sort of accomplishments we're getting with greener cleanups. Which moves us into the next bullet, which is, can we eventually provide measurable results? We're looking at things like, can we determine how many pounds of materials are recycled? How are we doing with reducing CO2 in our cleanups? Are we producing any BTUs associated with renewable energy in our cleanups? How many gallons of water have been saved, et cetera? These are the kind of results we're looking to be able to achieve and demonstrate quantitatively if possible. And we believe that perhaps the standard could be a way to get that documentation. And finally, it initiates a constructive dialogue by bringing all the parties at the table to talk about developing a standard. Now, we came up with this idea internally. We formed a cross-program work group coordinating with the states through a SWAMO's Green Cleanup Subcommittee to discuss this idea for a standard and to think about and formulate a plan for proceeding to develop one. So moving on to slide 16, this is the approach. Essentially, it's sort of governed by federal law. The National Technology and Transfer Act, which was enacted in 1996, requires that federal agencies develop standards through a consensus process. More specifically, it encourages federal agencies to use standards that are developed by the private sector rather than making up their own. SDOs are accredited by the Standard Development Organizations. We've nicknamed them SDOs. SDOs are accredited by the American National Standards Institute, and they must follow rigorous criteria for openness, fair stakeholder involvement, and consensus in their standard-making process. And they also must have requirements for review and periodic updates of their standards. SDOs rely on committees of volunteers and open stakeholder participation in the development of standards. So our thought here is that we need to find a standard-developing organization to partner with to develop this standard. And the circle here on the slide sort of gives the vision of how that would be. There'd be a standard development organization, and a good example that many in the cleanup community are familiar with is ASTM. So what happens is they convene a committee to develop a standard, and then EPA and all the other stakeholders out there, whether it's states or the private sector, could participate in the committee in the development of the standard. Slide 17. This is the conceptual development of the standard and how EPA would view its role in the process. So the first box at the top, we've sort of through this first step already. We've developed a work plan for EPA management and a vision for how this could be done. and we've received management approval from the upper management at EPA to proceed on this. So we're working, as we mentioned several times, we're working with the SWAMA to develop this framework and also to develop incentives. And it's my understanding that they're hoping to get their incentives white paper out later this spring, which we'll hopefully be able to share with you all when that's available. The next step is EPA collaborates with a standard developing organization. Our plan is to do this in late summer. We're getting close in our negotiations with some SBOs and hope to be able to finalize a partnership in the next couple of months. Then the SBO would run the process through a stakeholder-driven process, and essentially it could take a year and a half or 2 years till we could get to a standard. EPA would participate on the committee and be a full stakeholder partner in the process. Then you would have a green cleanup standard, hopefully. The next step, the bottom part of this slide, the green portion, is what we term certification or verification. The next step would be, once you have a standard, how do you prove that you met the standard? And there's different approaches for doing that. And sometimes it's as simple as self-declaration. Somebody steps up and says, I met the standard, and I sign off on it, and that's it. Or it may be a more complicated third-party review that's required. We don't know yet what's going to be required for demonstrating compliance with a standard. We have to, first of all, it's going to rely a lot on the final product. What does the standard look like, and how comfortable is EPA or, for example, a state regulatory authority? How comfortable are they with that standard? And there may be different approaches developed to how they want to recognize that somebody used the standard within their own program. So it may be that some state or EPA will be happy with a self-declaration approach, or it may be that a state or some other EPA cleanup program will require a little more documentation and certification of the use of the standard. Then what will happen is, once we have a standard, we will then put out sort of our approach for how we're going to recognize it. So ultimately what we want here is people to be able to say they used the standard, they did it right, and they've achieved a green cleanup, and whatever cleanup program they're in, whether it's a state or federal cleanup program, they'll get recognition for that. I mean, that's the ultimate goal here. But it's developed independently of the standard, and it often relies on how comfortable both the users of the standard are and the certifiers of the standard are in looking at what level of certification is going to be required. Okay, so the next slide, 18. These are some potential incentives that we've already identified for the standard. As I mentioned earlier, this was developed in cooperation with the SWAMO's Committee on Green Cleanups. And, we see all sorts of potential incentives here, both monetary and just, for feel-good reasons. There is a potential to get carbon offsets and credits by doing energy reduction technologies within the cleanup. We know that we're eventually going to probably get to a carbon marketplace in this country, hopefully, so there could be options in the future that there would be a monetary value to carbon offsets or credits. As we mentioned, we've been talking to U.S. Green Building Council, and there's potential for LEED credit in the future. There are some states that have grants and loans. There could be potential for grants or loans for this kind of effort, or they may be willing to reduce processing time or fees associated with their cleanup programs for doing green cleanup. Of course, there's always the publicity and recognition and sort of the feel-good factor that I mentioned, or contract incentives, particularly within the federal sector for federal cleanups, consultant education and accreditation. There may ultimately be an accreditation program that comes out of this, as I mentioned. So the plan is that EPA will evaluate their own incentives once the standard is developed and sort of provide guidance on how we will recognize a standard within our own cleanup programs and what incentives may be associated with that. But we're a long way from that at the moment. Next slide is slide 19. The key attributes. We tried to put together an overview of the key attributes of what we want to see in a standard. First of all, and foremost, and primary, is it will be voluntary. EPA does not anticipate that this will be a requirement under any of our cleanup programs at this time. Existing regulatory structures will continue to apply in all programs, but we are looking to encourage people to do these practices and, as I mentioned, ultimately give them credit by following a standard. The next attribute is transparency. By using the SDO stakeholder process, you know, we'll be able to get everybody involved, and everybody will have a voice in the development of the standard. We want to make sure it's universal to make it easiest for stakeholders to implement. We want to try to hopefully design it so that it can be used within all cleanup programs, federal and state level, so that everybody's comfortable with using the standard. In that case, it would also be flexible that programs and states can develop their own recognition programs for people who use the standard. It's a way for us to get to encourage the use of green cleanups using minimal resources, because it will be developed by a standard development organization. EPA will not have to run its own stakeholder development process, which can be very expensive and time-consuming. And eventually, we may have independent third-party or self-certification audits, so that the agencies themselves will not have to do the review. We won't have to sit there and analyze every cleanup and ourselves determine whether or not it meets green cleanup criteria. It will be done independently. It will be market-driven. It will hopefully promote technology innovation and verifiable. You know, we're hoping to be able to document decisions that are made, and it's very important to look at trying to measure how we're doing with green cleanup. As I mentioned, some of those measurements earlier about, pounds of materials recycled or carbon credits and carbon reductions, et cetera. So what we're doing is we're developing our own vision. EPA is developing its own vision of a framework for a potential standard that it plans to share with the standard development organization. So we're putting together sort of our key principles and the key attributes that we want to see in the standard that we will make publicly available on our CLUIN website as soon as it's ready. We're getting close, but it's not quite ready for prime time, but it should be soon. And then the framework will be open, and everybody will see what we at least feel is important to have in a standard. Next slide, slide 20. There's a lot of challenges to this approach. It sounds great. It sounds simple, but it's actually going to take a lot of work, and it's going to be challenging. The first challenge is keeping it simple. You know, we have a lot of different cleanups, from the easy ones, such as tank removals or asbestos cleanups, to the very complicated, very big, dirty, nasty sites. So we want to find something that can be applied as universally as possible and give people as much opportunity to use the standard. And trying to keep it simple so that it's not going to be overly resource intensive for a property owner or a consultant to use. The second big challenge is defining the scope. We call them the boundary issues in our own little work group. For example, how far do we look at sustainable reuse on a site? If you are going to put in, you know, ultimately redevelop the site and maybe put in a green building or do other sustainable reuse practices, can you get credit under the cleanup standard? So what's the line sort of between cleanup and reuse, and how can we be fair in giving people credit for what they're doing and yet still making sure that we get the best cleanup possible? Another big question that we're hearing a lot of comment on is life cycle analysis. You want to look at, you know, all the materials, for example, that are going into the cleanup technology, and what is their impact from cradle to grave on the environment, and how far do you delve into the details on every single piece of material and every single practice within the cleanup. So life cycle analysis is another big point of discussion. Balancing various stakeholder needs, that's always an issue. Everybody has their own needs out there, and that'll be done through the stakeholder process of the SDO. Specifying incentives and certification prior to completion of the standard. Like I said, we went through a list. We tried to come up with some easy ideas, but it's very difficult at this time to tell people before the standard's developed and we see what it looks like, you know, exactly what's going to be in it for them. So we can think broadly about it, but the details will be worked out later. Establishing baseline values to measure improvements against. So what is green compared to what we're already doing? You know, we're already doing many things that could probably be considered green. And can you do better? And how do you determine, you know, what the baseline should be? And another challenge is minimizing energy use while supporting active cleanup. We don't want to rule out energy-intensive cleanup technologies per se. As Carlos showed in one of his earlier slides, you know, we have a lot of great technologies out there that we're using. Many of them may be energy-intensive. We don't want to just rule them out and say we can never use them again because they're too energy-intensive. We want to make sure we're getting the best cleanup. There's many other factors that will that go into why you pick a particular cleanup technology, such as cost and community acceptance and feasibility, et cetera. Green is just going to be one other aspect to be balanced against everything else. And, you know, there are ways even within cleanup technologies that may be considered a little more energy intensive that you can optimize what you're doing to reduce that energy input or that energy need. So there's going to be a lot of questions, I'm sure, about how to do some of that. Next slide is 21. This is our timeline, our time frame for what EPA is hoping to do in all this, starting with, well, let's just jump to where we are. We're in March here. As I mentioned, we're working on putting together our framework, sort of our guiding principles for what we think should be in a standard, and we are going to be conducting outreach. Of course, this is part of the outreach. We also have some other outreach activities planned to try. We want to get the word out there to people that we're doing this, essentially, that we're hoping to partner with an SDO, that we're hoping that we're going to work with them to develop a standard, and what our view is of what that standard should include in order to be valid and effective. We hope to finalize that framework. What we're doing is sort of going to collect feedback from you all, from everybody out there, all our stakeholders, into what's in our framework and what's in our process here. We really want to hear back from you. There's some questions coming up at the end that you can help us with that Patricia's going to cover. But basically, we want to hear from you in the next couple of months so that later this summer we can finalize our framework, get our management approval on the framework, and begin to collaborate with a standard development organization. In the meantime, the states are supposed to be finalizing their state incentives paper later this summer as well. Later in the year, into the fall and September, we hope to have a draft certification options paper. You know, if we have a standard, you know, how could it or would it be certified? What does the EPA and the states think would be the best approaches for certification? Then we imagine a whole lot of work going on in 2010, working with the SDO through their process, and then hopefully by 2011 sometime we'll have a standard. We can conduct some pilot projects. And once we know what the standard looks like, we can finalize our program-specific recognition options. Slide 22. Okay, now we get to the questions. Now this is where we want to hear from you, and I'm going to turn this back over to Patricia.
Thanks, Christine, and thanks, Carlos. If you joined us late, our presenters today were Carlos Plachon of the EPA Superfund Program and Christine Gaffney of EPA Region 3. At this point, we would encourage you, if you have questions, to submit them via email. In a couple of minutes, I'll also invite you to ask over the phone. But at this point, we also want to pose some questions to you. You've heard our outline today of why we want to do a green cleanup standard, what we've done to date as far as providing incentives for all sectors to incorporate green and sustainable solutions into their cleanup and their remedies. So, now we're proposing that EPA work with the private sector through a standards developing organization to come up with a green cleanup standard to promote more green, more sustainable solutions within cleanup and remedy decisions. Or implementation, I should say, remedy implementation. So our questions to you are, do you think that a voluntary standard is a viable approach? Do you think that this, if we have a voluntary approach out there and available to folks, will it be implemented? Will it be used? Do we have a good chance of having close to universal acceptance or acceptance within the cleanup community? Again, we want to do a general approach to a voluntary standard, not make it regulatory specific, but a standard that could work in all of our cleanup programs. Also, are we targeting the right core elements? The core elements that we're speaking to are provided on slide 8 of the presentation. That was the slide that Carlos went over earlier in the presentation. Also, what should our boundaries be? How far can we go with within a green cleanup standard to promote green and sustainable solutions? When does cleanup stop, and where does redevelopment begin? And what should be wrapped in within the goals of the voluntary cleanup standard? Also, should the boundaries and standard apply to projects, to practices, to people? Is it the person who's doing the cleanup? Is it the site, the practice, et cetera? Will the market bear the cost? We understand that sometimes the greenest and most sustainable solution or way to implement a green cleanup remedy may not be the cheapest. Will the market be willing to bear the cost of doing this in order to do the right thing, to be green, to promote human health and the environment and sustainable approaches? If the market may not entirely bear the cost voluntarily, what kinds of incentives does EPA need to put forward to help with promote the implementation of the standard? What kind of certification approach might yield the best results for us? Should we rely on folks voluntarily implementing the approach and the standard, or should there be a rigorous certification approach put in place that people have to go through either an audit process or a certification process to be able to document and verify that they, in fact, did the approach in the appropriate manner? Or as having a voluntary approach out there with a self-certification or signature, is that enough? What about picking a standards development organization? We've talked to a few. In particular, we've had several discussions with and plan to have additional discussions with ASTM. They seem to be willing to work with us. We've talked to a few folks who don't think it's a good match to work with them. But we're still looking for advice. Are there other SDOs, standard developing organizations out there that are certified by ANSI and that may be willing to work with us and that may be a good match for this type of effort? Also, how should we measure these results? So those are our questions to you. If you want to think about them for a minute, we have a few questions that have come in over the Internet, and we'll see if we can provide you some answers to those. Our first question, I should pause here for a minute. The key questions that I just put to you are listed on. I just went through them. And now we're just going to take a couple of seconds here to answer questions that have come in over the Internet. Our first question is, will the voluntary green cleanup standard become a submittal for the ITRC GSR team to incorporate into its technical document?
Thanks. Thanks for the question. This is Carlos. I'll give it a try. Maybe Christine can expand on it. ITRC, the Green Sample Remediation Team, is just getting started. We have had a couple of meetings, conference calls to discuss the parallels between this effort, the voluntary green cleanup standards, and the work that they would be doing. And there are, to a certain degree, I guess it's whatever is produced, let's say the standards, how could I go about this? They're focused on developing, as I mentioned, tech regs that evaluate how innovations or new approaches fit into existing frameworks. And they do training on that. The standards would be more of the recognition. This is what's considered green, and this is how it's being recognized. So there are certain parallels there, and anything that is being done in developing the standards will be done in parallel with the work that ITRC is doing. I'm not sure if Anna Willett or anybody else from ITRC is on the call.
Hey, Carlos, this is Sriram Marabushi. I'm the program advisor for the GSR team.
Sriram, thanks for stepping in.
Sriram Briggs, I'm going to be on the GSR team.
Yes, the way we look at it is ITRC doesn't touch any standards or regulations or policies. All we do is technical and regulatory guidance documents. So in answer to that question, probably yes, we will be including whatever the standards you guys come up with into the document as an appendix, but probably that's all we are going to do.
Thanks, Irene.
Thank you. A second question that we got over the internet is, are there grants funding opportunities to provide state regulatory agencies cost recovery funding or technical assistance for green cleanup projects? The questioner says this could provide incentive to enroll in a green cleanup program, which would have reduced regulatory costs. I think that I can safely say that EPA will not have additional grants. We won't develop grants around this green cleanup standard. It's not to say that this would fall outside the scope of other types of grants that EPA may provide to states, such as Brownfield's 128 state grant program. It could fit with developing a green cleanup standard or adopting EPA's green cleanup standard at the state level may be an activity that you could put within your cooperative agreement for the 128 funding. But at this juncture, EPA does not plan to do a separate grant program for the adoption of green cleanup standards at the state level. Do we have any, we might as well go to questions over the phone. If anybody has input to us in response to the questions that we posed on slide 22 or any additional questions, we can take them at this time.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
There was a discussion of, I'm just curious how this works because we've had dialogue with some of these groups that are developing these tools as far as how much energy is produced, all these different things. And we've run into some difficulty that some of those tools look like cost-benefit analysis. Some of those tools really go into remedy selection as opposed to are we doing things in a green way. How do we expect to deal with that situation in this program?
I'll take a cut at that question. We are seeing a lot of tools being developed out there by both in the public and in the private sector to look at different approaches to look at the sustainability of cleanups. Many of those tools are being developed for consideration in the remedy selection phase. It's a super fun terminology in this case, but it's for the remedy selection phase. The remedy selection process, as far as EPA is concerned, is not going to change. It's going to be exactly the same. If somebody comes forward and says, we've selected this remedy because we consider it to be more sustainable, it's not going to get very far. There is a lot of work there are opportunities for considering sustainability in the existing remedy selection process, and there's enough flexibility in there. But additionally, one thing that we're trying to emphasize is that where a lot of opportunities exist to reduce the footprint of cleaned up a site, it's not in the remedy selection, it's in putting the remedy in place. We don't expect that the suite of remedies or cleanup approaches is going to change significantly. So what we want to foster is for any remedy or cleanup approach that's selected, where are the opportunities to minimize this footprint, regardless of whether it's in situ thermal desorption, which is a huge energy hog, but it's a very effective tool when applied well, to anything such as M&A. So we're definitely not suggesting that M&A is the lowest carbon footprint, therefore the best solution. No, what we're seeking is how can we reduce the environmental footprint of any remedy that we put in place. I hope that helps.
Thanks, Carlos. I'm going to go to one other question that's come over the internet. The question is, you mentioned the consideration of green standards in the same group of balancing criteria as cost, effectiveness, community acceptance, etc. Certainly, when it comes to selection and approval of a remedy, the green standard will not be given the same weight as the other criteria that are based in the statute. Is this correct?
This is a very similar question, yes, and I'd say it will not be given the same weight. No.
To clarify, we only under Superfund, we only have 9 criteria. So green is not a temp.
Correct.
It's part of the 9, we would factor it in as part of the 9. That's the key. I think for Superfund, we have other programs here.
Yes, different programs have different considerations, and lots of these are states, but certainly when it comes to the Superfund program, the answer is no, it will not be given the same weight.
Are there other questions from the phone? If not, go ahead.
You mentioned in on the slide key attribute 19 that, you know, this will be a voluntary standard, and I'm wondering how EPA orders are going to be written to have green remediations considered, if they're going to be written into those orders, or if this is going to be just a voluntary program that then sites could progress through basically on a parallel channel as to just a standard cleanup program.
Yeah, hi, this is Christine, and the answer to that is no, we don't plan to make it a requirement. EPA is not looking to make this standard a requirement at this time. We are looking ultimately to be able to recognize people who use the standard, but we don't know what that's going to look like yet because we don't know what the standard is going to look like, and hopefully it's going to be something we can support and give recognition for under our programs, but it's not going to be part of any requirements under any of our programs. Now, some of the states may choose to make it a requirement, and that will be up to them. In fact, we've heard from some states that they may be willing to make it a requirement.
Thanks, Christine. Other questions on the phone?
Hi, this is Todd Bragdon with CDM in Denver. I was curious, is there a potential that the green remediation considerations may be incorporated into a value engineering approach?
Yes, that's a very good question, and thank you for bringing it up. As far as the Superfund process, and again, different cleanup programs have different operations, I guess you could call it that, and we're definitely looking at every phase in the life cycle of a remedy, particularly the big ones, MPL sites, everything from remedy selection, as was discussed earlier, all the way through post-construction. So the value engineering is an important phase, and we're looking at how can we overlay consideration of green cleanup best practices in each phase. We're not going to change the way we do business. We're just going to overlay this with the current processes we have in place, and value engineering is certainly one of them.
Thanks, Carlos. I'm going to take one more question from the Internet that we got. It's asking, could the EPA Brownfields grant program offer additional scoring, I guess that means points, for taking green steps, or offer added funding for taking additional steps for undertaking green cleanup efforts? I think right now if you have gone through the EPA grant program, our application does provide points for sustainability alternatives. So if you're applying for a cleanup grant under the EPA Brownfields program, we do have a section where we ask you to explain your sustainability plans and how your cleanup and redevelopment plan will offer sustainable solutions. So I think we would keep it within that category or that point system. I don't at this time imagine that we would add additional points, but we are always reevaluating our grant application process and perhaps in the future, but I don't see that happening imminently. Other questions from the phone? If not, I'll take another one submitted on the Internet. A questioner has asked, could an existing program such as EPA's Performance Track program be used to recognize participants in green remediation? At a minimum, the Performance Track program provides a great model for a parallel program. I think at this point, given that we have a new administration on, we may be, I don't know what the future or ongoing position is with regard to Performance Track. I imagine that it probably will go forward at least for a while. But also keep in mind that we're still in the very infancy of the development of the voluntary cleanup program. So we'll have to see how Performance Track grows and whether or not the administration sticks with it and keeps it as in its current form, if it's changed, and where it is when we get to the end of the development of the voluntary cleanup standard. So after we have the standard in place, that certainly is one option for us to go forward with a recognition program. There may be others. So I guess all I can say is let's stay tuned on that. But I understand the comment and the question. Carlos?
Yeah, I wanted to add something. That's a very valid, very helpful question. And one of the things we did in September of last year when we were starting to develop this concept internally was to do a benchmark analysis of existing voluntary programs, and that's one of the things we looked at. What are the incentives for participants to take off? Because often there's least a little bit of an additional management cost just to go through a voluntary process such as this. We looked at Energy Star, we looked at WasteWise, we looked at LEED Green Buildings, and we looked at Water Sense. We did not look at Performance Track. We thought with those four we had a pretty good representation. And there are some good ideas out there. We'll have to see how this moves forward, but definitely we're looking for parallels and tools that already exist of how we can recognize and create the right set of incentives for people to adopt these standards.
Thanks, Carlos. Okay, another question from the Internet. When considering the scope of a green cleanup standard, will risk-based passive cleanup practices such as monitored natural attenuation have a place? Will monitored natural attenuation be considered a green cleanup practice as compared to active remediation, such as injections, since monitored natural attenuation is sustainable by allowing naturally occurring bacteria to consume a plume?
I'll take the credit of this one. One of the parallels I like to draw is when what is considered green is the example of phytoremediation. One could also argue that phytoremediation, the use of trees, is boy, it couldn't be greener than that when it comes to cleanup approach. And no, it's back to the point we made earlier. It's more about how, regardless of what cleanup approach you're going to use, how you put it in place. And you could have a phytoremediation project that's an absolute disaster. It uses overload too many pesticides. You use too many fertilizers that cause nutrient loading in surface water streams nearby. You could use invasive species. You could use huge monocultures. There are many things that could go wrong with phytoremediation, with a phytoremediation project. So you could have a green phytoremediation project and another one that's not green. So it's more about, regardless of what cleanup approach you take at a site, it's more about how you put it in place than the qualities of the approach itself.
Other questions on the phone? Oh, thanks, Carlos. Okay, we have a couple of more questions submitted through the Internet. One questioner is saying that it seems that what we presented today is narrowly addresses the Superfund program and asks, how could the voluntary cleanup standard be reflected in brownfield or RCRA program cleanups?
Christine or Deb, would you like to take a cut of that one?
Yeah, well, you're saying how would this be, I'm not sure I understand the question, how would it be implemented with brownfield programs?
Yes, the questioner is saying that what we presented today generally is focused on, they felt that it was focused on the Superfund program and the implementation of remedies under Superfund, but they're asking how could the green cleanup standard be used in the brownfields or RCRA program?
Well, I'll address the brownfields question, and then we'll have Deb, here's my colleague from RCRA, approach RCRA. But most of our brownfields cleanups happen under the state cleanup programs. So what we normally do is, defer to a state voluntary program as the approver of the cleanup. So as long as the state recognizes the green cleanup standard and as long as the cleanup is approved by the state cleanup program, then it would be something that EPA would be able to recognize. So once again, this all boils down to the cleanup has got to be approved first and foremost by whatever cleanup program it's in, whether it's Superfund, whether it's RCRA, whether it's a state VCP. Ultimately, it's got to be approved cleanup first. Then you can make it a green cleanup.
This is Deb, and I'm a co-worker of Christine's and co-lead of this project, and I'm in the RCRA Corrective Action Program. In the RCRA program, we have three threshold criteria and then seven balancing factors. And as Christine and Carlos have said over and over, you have to meet the regulatory expectations of those of the program. So for RCRA, you have to go through the process. But if you want to do a broader evaluation outside of that scope, okay, and it'll help you, what I would say, what this process does is help you think more broadly. It's a thought process of how you can optimize your cleanup. Absolutely, that is the idea of the green cleanup standard. So what you give to the regulator is what you think your proposed remedy is or, remedy option, and it meets the factors that you need to under that program. But this is something outside of the program that helps people think more broadly, similar to the way LEED program helped people think more broadly under when they design buildings. You have to meet the building inspector's goals, okay, and that's your regulator. But then what LEED did, by putting out broader parameters, it helped people think about things they could do to make it a better building, a greener building. What we're trying to do is help people think more broadly how they can better their cleanup. And that actually may lead you to a different cleanup. As long as it meets the regulatory expectations, you'll be fine.
Thanks, Chris and Deb. Other questions from the phone? Also remember, if you look at slide 22, we post some questions to you, the audience, and if you have input, advice, experiences that you want to relate to us in the group, we would appreciate that as well. We have one more question that came through on the internet that I will read at this time. The commenter says, when bearing in mind the key parameters for determining what cleanup projects are sustainable, has EPA thought about the idea of building into the standard worker health and safety as part of sustainability of a green cleanup project? In other words, the commenter says, will EPA include contractor OSHA recordable injury rates, involvement of workers themselves in controlling health and safety exposure on the job, or hazard assessment? Working green should include sustainability in worker health and safety as a core concept.
I'll give it a try. This is Carlos. We have considered it and determined that it's not relevant to this process. It's not that we don't care about worker health and safety. The place to address worker health and safety issues is through the health and safety plans for projects. So changing the remedy versus improving worker health and safety operations on the site, those are two completely different things. So we don't believe that mixing them in will help. Changing the remedy to protect worker health and safety is not the best approach to do that.
Thanks, Carlos. Do you have other questions or comments? Again, our questions to you are voluntary standards a viable approach? Do we think that the market will bear the cost? Does EPA need to develop additional incentives, to encourage the use of a voluntary standard? What certification approach might yield the best results for us? Does anyone out there have ideas regarding a standards developing organization that EPA may want to reach out to?
I have one more question. We have the LEED model. Okay. I don't know if we have other benchmark models that are examples. It would seem that having a model and following like LEED, you would know what this thing might look like at the end. I'm just curious if there were other benchmarks examples that went through something similar and worked, whereas LEED's our only example we've got so far.
No, yeah, there are other. I mean, we did look at a few others. The ones I mentioned, the ones we looked at specifically were WasteWise, Energy Star, WaterSense, and LEED.
So these were all standards development by independent groups?
That's correct. No, no, not all of them. No. No. They didn't all go through the SEO process, but maybe Deb or Christine can help us. We are working with the standard, with the, what is the name, Nancy? Sorry?
Yeah.
No, internally, within the agency.
Our standard official?
Executive, yes.
Yeah. Mary McKeel.
Within the agency, her role is across the agency is to help the different programs develop voluntary standards, going back to NIST and the National Technology Transfer and whatever act.
Go ahead.
We are trying to learn from experiences that others have had in the agency and outside of the agency, but I'm not sure if that's where your question is coming from.
Well, just a matter.
This is Christina. There have been EPA programs that have tried to develop their own standards and have tried to go through the stakeholder process on their own to develop standards and not use an SBO, and we've talked to some of them to figure out which would be the better approach, EPA just doing it themselves or partnering with an SBO. And based on all our discussions and analysis, we've concluded that it would be better, faster, and a better stakeholder process to collaborate with an SBO.
Other questions from the phone or comments? I'll offer that we did get one comment regarding the boundaries that we set for the voluntary standard. One commenter says that in consideration of the boundaries question, the commenter would submit that the sustainability concept should be seamless between the remediation and redevelopment programs, although the separate programs may use different checklists during each process. They should overlap and be transparent between both programs throughout.
Yes, we totally agree with that, and that's why we are trying to stay, keep in contact with U.S. Green Buildings and talk to them throughout this process so that they will hopefully be seamless in the long run and will be creditable under their program as well.
And on that point, they do have a draft, I believe, and if somebody has more current information, please correct me, a draft sustainable neighborhood development standards. So that's one of the reasons why we're trying to set, don't want an artificial boundary, but we're trying to define what it is we mean by cleanups, because folks are already working on the redevelopment, sustainable redevelopment side of the house. But yes, we'd hope to make it as seamless as possible.
Additional questions or comments? We do have a questioner who has a follow-up question to the health and safety consideration. The commenter is saying that although they understand what Carlos just said, is wondering if worker safety and health considerations could be necessary considerations within the green cleanup voluntary standard, and what about any new training requirements for workers doing green cleanup? I think as far as worker safety is concerned, with the development of the green cleanup standard and considerations, we aren't necessarily looking at the development of entirely new technologies, but more in the implementation of technologies. Can you use equipment that has fewer emissions? Can we look at using alternative energy sources? Can we look at how to save water or reuse water, wastewater or runoff water at the site, et cetera? So many of these things, by nature, fewer emissions might mean greater worker safety, but they aren't necessarily huge changes in technology implementation. However, having said that, should new technologies come online, I'm sure that OSHA and others will want to look at whether or not there should be new health and safety standards put in place, but we don't see that as an outgrowth or a component of the voluntary cleanup standard.
And at the same time, we are maintaining communication with those interest groups. I was at the meeting in Chapel Hill in November of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, a Green Jobs Conference, and the question you just raised was actually one of the panel session topics. And so we are continuing maintaining that communication. Another area that we're looking at is what is not so much in work health and safety, but was it about training workers, particularly for small businesses, if we can help them get up to speed on where the opportunities are, for example, as subcontractors and providing a green approach to the site, can you give them a competitive so there are two aspects there. One is work health and safety, and the other is small business opportunities.
Thanks, Carlos. We have a question. Someone's asking for contact information, either phone or email, to provide us, EPA, with additional input to the questions that we posed. Excellent question, and thanks for asking. If you look on the cover sheet of today's presentation, you have each of the presenters today's names. All of our email addresses are our last name dot our first name at epa.gov. So on the cover sheet of the presentation, you have the spelling of our names, and our email addresses are last name dot first name at epa.gov. So thank you very much, and we would encourage anybody on today's call, if you do have additional input after today, if you gather information and would like to provide it to us, please do that by sending us an email. Was someone about to answer a question or ask a question? Okay, we have another question over the internet here. The question is, where is ASTM in terms of standards for incorporating green methods in their investigations and remediating remediation engineering practices? My understanding from working with ASTM is that they're really at the initiation of the effort as well, and so actually that's a good reason for us to be talking to ASTM if they're as a one of the largest and most recognized standards development organizations. They want to initiate a standard and have identified members to lead a task group to do that. So the timing is good for us to discuss with them a joint effort here. So they're just at the initiation phase as well. Any other questions or comments?
Well, thanks for that. We left some silence in case somebody is shy, but it looks like all the questions you wanted to ask have been asked. We'll be available to take questions by email as well. As Patricia mentioned, our email address is our last name, our first name. If you go to slide 23, I believe it is, that's the URL I mentioned earlier, the Green Remediation webpage. A couple of resources on that page I wanted to highlight. On the left is the Green Remediation Primer. You can download it from greenremediation.org in PDF format, or you can order a hard copy. We did print a few for those of us who like to page through things. And then on the right-hand side is a screen capture of the profiles section. As you can see, those little text on the left are the names of the projects. And on the right, those little icons are for each one of those projects. Do they highlight renewable energy? Do they highlight greenhouse gas reductions, water efficiency, water quality, best practices, land and ecosystem stewardship, recycling, et cetera. So do look through those for examples of projects, and we try to have sites and projects from multiple programs, RCRA, the Superfund, both federal facilities, PRP lead, fund lead, et cetera. So we have those there. So encourage you to take a look at that URL, and that is where we will keep green remediation-related information current. And if you go to slide 24, the last one, thank you very much for your participation today. To view additional resources, you have the link at the bottom there, particularly important to us, and we do use the feedback forums to both improve the Internet seminars we provide here through Bloom.org, but also to specifically hear back from you on there are some specific questions related to the subject matter that was addressed. So finally with that,
So I just want to thank everyone. Remember your presenters today were Carlos Pouchon of EPA Superfund Program and Christine Gaffney with EPA Region 3. My name is Patricia Overmeyer of EPA's Brownfields Program. Again, our names are on the front page, the cover sheet of the presentation. We do ask that you think about some of the questions that we put forward there on page 22. Of the presentation today. If you have follow-up comments, questions, input for us, please, we want to hear from you. We're early in the process, so we want to take as much comment and input as we can get, particularly those of you who have experience in the field. We can really benefit from your experience and knowledge. I also want to end with just an apology for the error in the email that went out to some of you. You had the wrong call-in number this afternoon, and hopefully we got all of that cleared up. If you missed any part of the presentation, the CLUIN archive will include a complete version of today's presentation. So if you missed anything, you can catch it on the CLUIN archive. Just go to the CLUIN website and look in the archives, and you will find today's presentation. Also, once you look at that, if you have questions still, please feel free to contact any of us, and we will help you to any extent that we can. Are there any last questions? Okay, thank you, everyone, for your time and attention today, and we hope to hear from you in the future.